Hello, my name's Tom Boone.
And I'm Joanna Bailey.
Welcome to a brand new episode of the Simple Flying Podcast, where we'll give you the lowdown on the latest news from the world of commercial aviation. Here's what we've got for you this week.
Coming up today, I'll see if new photos of the world's largest plane could mean restoration has begun, while Tom looks at some serious wide-body aircraft orders.
Joe will talk us through the mess Qantas finds itself in, while I look at all things Ryanair has been up to this week.
Finally, I'll see why a Nigerian airline has declared Heathrow or nothing.
So now you know what's in store, let's get on with the show. And Joe, I've seen these pictures, but I guess a lot of our listeners may not have, unless they're also avid Simple Flying readers. So talk to us.
Definitely. Well, you'll remember that early on in the Ukraine-Russia conflict, Russian troops destroyed the world's largest aircraft, the Antonov AN-225, at its base at Hostomel Airport. Back then, we shared some heartbreaking photos of the plane where it was burned and damaged, and in fact, the entire nose section was resting on the ground. Well, despite the state of the AN-225, the manufacturer has always maintained it's committed to rebuilding the aircraft. Even President Zelensky pledged support to bring the Maria back to the skies at some point. But, you know, with such an enormous plane comes an enormous price tag. And given Ukraine's other economic challenges right now, hopes for restoration were kind of small. In fact, after inspecting late last year what was left of the AN-225, experts estimated it would require a $500 million investment to bring it back to life. Antonov maintained that it was rather too soon to put a price tag on the reconstruction, but declared it was definitely committed to restoring the aircraft. Well, there's been no more news on the cost of reconstruction, but new photos have appeared that seem to suggest some sort of work is already underway. Pictures taken last month that Simple Flying got its hands on show that the rear fuselage of the aircraft have had the nose and the wings removed. And in fact, parts of the aircraft seem to have been disassembled over the past year, and not very much of it remains intact. Its signature double rear empennage, for example, is nowhere to be seen. The wings can be seen. They're on the side, on supports. The engines have been removed. And photos from the airport show that all the wreckage from the battle and the other sabotaged aircraft have since been cleaned up. There's no roof on the hangar. Apparently, this was actually removed to prevent it from falling in on the AN-225 while it was being dismantled. But of course, not all of the aircraft is being saved. As I mentioned earlier, the front section was the most badly damaged. In fact, there's another photo from recent weeks that shows a pile of wreckage bearing the signature AN-225 yellow and blue livery piled up in a corner of the airport. So the good news is that some parts of the airplane are pretty much intact. In fact, the rear portion of the fuselage and all its many landing gear wheels is still visible. The photographer who went to Hostomel to take these photos was told by people there that the airplane was being deconstructed for storage. So, you know, whether this is a sign of restoration beginning is kind of still up for debate. But some parts of the Maria are still flying, specifically some of its engines. Deputy CEO of Antonov, Maxim Sankotsky, said that three of the AN-225-6D18T engines have been repaired, and because they're also used on the AN-125, they are now supporting the wider Antonov fleet. So, in part, the Maria is still flying, but obviously just with donated parts. As we all know, or hopefully you know, there is a half-finished AN-225 in a hangar in Ukraine. So, you know, there's been lots of speculation that it would be super easy to use some of the salvaged parts from the destroyed AN-225 to finish off this other aircraft. But of course, all the machinery and the production facilities that would be needed no longer exist. So it's a nice idea, but there are huge challenges to executing such a project. I don't think there's going to be any sign of the Maria coming back anytime soon, but maybe once things calm down in Ukraine, that's something they'll turn their attention to. They seem very enthusiastic, as I am, about this very big plane that I've actually never seen. Have you ever seen it at an airport, Tom?
I don't think I've seen it. I feel like it's something I would really know at the top of my head if I had, so yeah. I assume not, but who knows? Maybe I saw it in passing once without realising.
Maybe so.
Maybe once I just saw it out an airplane window at Toulouse, but that could have just been a normal Antonov. I'm not sure without looking. But I did find it interesting because I looked at the satellite images of Hostomel Airport on both Google and Apple Maps, and Apple Maps shows the hangar completely intact. So that's obviously a very old image that they've got. Google Maps, you know, it's obviously since the destruction happened, because you can see chunks of the roof are missing, like you mentioned, and a lot of damage around there, but it's not been removed. So it would be interesting to see when the images update again, what you can see from above. This current image that Google's using says it was taken in 2023 by Airbus satellites. So
needs an update, I think, if the roof's entirely off and the 225's partly dismantled. But yeah, if you haven't seen those pictures, they're all on Simple Flying, of course. Do come and have a look. It's kind of in bits, but maybe it's a good sign. You never know.
Who knows? We'll have to wait and see, as we like to say on this podcast. I wanted to talk about something a little bit more cheerful, is what is going on at both Airbus and Boeing, particularly with regards to aircraft orders and specifically the wide body, because both of them on Monday had a little surprise in store for us, both Airbus and Boeing. Boeing came first, and they revealed alongside Air Canada that the Canadian carrier had ordered up to 30 787-10 wide-body aircraft. So 18 of these are firm orders, and then there's 12 more options for further deliveries. The Canadian flag carrier is expecting to take delivery of the first aircraft from the plane maker as soon as Q4 2025. And that means that Air Canada will be one of just a handful of carriers that operates all three variants of the Dreamliner. Commenting on the order, Michael Rozeau, I've probably said that wrong, apologies, President and Chief Executive Officer of Air Canada, remarked, "Air Canada has made investing in the passenger experience a core priority. Our experience shows customers greatly enjoy flying on the Dreamliner, so we're pleased to offer them a larger version of this popular aircraft, which will premiere a new state-of-the-art interior cabin design. As importantly, the 787 is highly fuel efficient and will generate operational savings as well as support for our sustainability goals of reducing emissions." So I looked into the order a little bit more, of course. One interesting thing is that the airline has specifically said the new old aircraft are going to replace older aircraft in its fleet, leading to a 25% lower fuel burn, but it doesn't say exactly which aircraft it is. Obviously, they removed the 767s around the pandemic to turn them into freighters, but the only thing that really stood out to me as a possibility for being replaced would be the Airbus A330-300s, because they've got 18 of them and they've ordered 18 787s. And the 330-300s have an average age of 17.4 years. So kind of getting there in terms of airline age, you know, you don't really get much more than that, maybe 20, 23. But, you know, we'll have to wait and see with that. One interesting caveat of the order is that it's actually kind of an existing order that has been modified in a very drastic way, if you want to look at it like that, or it's a new order that's cancelled another order. We'll see what happened. But Air Canada had two 777F freighters on order from Boeing, and they've now confirmed that the Boeing 787-10 aircraft order announced with Boeing today, or when it Monday, substitutes for a previously announced agreement to purchase two Boeing 777 freighter aircraft, and as a result, Air Canada will no longer take delivery of the two freighters.
That's crazy. So, yeah we were going to get two cargo planes. Now we're going to get 17 wide-body passenger 18. Planes. That's 18.
Yeah, but, you know, also, I wonder if when they placed the cargo order, they had already decided that they were going to turn their 767s into freighters.
It's interesting if you're right on that A330 thing, because it seems an awful lot of airlines that fly the 330, the CEO version, are maybe swinging towards the Dreamliner as a replacement rather than the A330neo, which seems crazy. You know, if you've got all the kind of facilities to deal with an A330, wouldn't you stay with the same manufacturer? But maybe an interesting one to look into there. I don't know, maybe it stacks up better in terms of fuel efficiency.
But the other interesting thing about that is that with then give Air Canada an all Boeing widebody fleet. So perhaps there's efficiencies to be gained in that respect. One interesting thing about the order, though, is, like I said, this will mean that they will operate the Dash 8, Dash 9 and Dash 10 of the 787, the Boeing 787. And currently there's only three airlines that properly do this, which is ANA, British Airways, and United Airlines. Of course, Korean Air kind of gets an honorary mention because it's currently flying the 787-9 and has 787-10s on order. And it does also operate a single 787-8 in a Boeing business jet configuration without the Korean Air livery. But I feel like that's kind of taking a liberty to say it properly operates all three.
Yeah.
but, you know, it wasn't the only big order on Monday. Like I said, the other order was for Airbus and came from one of its very close geographically carriers. So the Air France KLM group decided that it was going to order 50 Airbus A350s and place all options for 40 more of them.
Wow.
I think that's kind of interesting as well, because with the Air France KLM group before, you know, I think it was the 787 and A350 orders were going to be split. And then at some point, the decision was made 787 is going KLM, A350 is going Air France. Be interesting to see how the fleet continues to develop with all more of these A350s that Air France and KLM are going to get. Are they going to be used to replace older aircraft or expand the fleet or a mix of both? But, you know, definitely watch this space again.
Yeah, that's interesting, because I can't imagine all 90 potentially would go to Air France. I mean, it can't possibly need that many wide bodies. But, you know, like you said, in the past, they've said no more Airbus wide bodies for KLM. They were going to stick to the Dreamliners. So maybe they've changed their minds. We'll have to find out.
Watch this space.
Well, I wanted to head down under for a bit of a chat about Qantas, because as we know, they've been rather struggling with their reputation over the last few months. Tom, you previously spoke on a podcast about former CEO Alan Joyce making an early departure from the airline, leaving poor new CEO Vanessa Hudson holding the reins and trying to deal with the media storm and problems internally and everything that's going on.
I think Angela Merkel has a good word for that, which I probably can't say on an English-speaking podcast.
Oh, I see. Yeah, you'll have to tell me that off the air. But yeah, I do feel for Miss Hudson, because it's a big job that she's taken on. But, you know, there's more hostility brewing. The airline's annual report indicated that Joyce would leave the airline with more than $14 million US dollars in a mix of remuneration and short and long-term bonuses. So obviously that didn't go down well with Qantas employees or the flying public, given everything that's happened over the last couple of years. But they have said that part of these bonuses is linked to customer satisfaction. And when they ranked their performance, the score on this front was 0 out of a possible 20%. As such, it looks like some of Joyce's payout could be withheld. They're estimating at the moment around $1.5 million will be withheld initially, and a further $5.5 million could be clawed back if the board deems it necessary. That decision will essentially come down to the outcome of an ongoing investigation by the Australian Competition and Consumer Commission, or ACCC. So the regulator has accused Qantas of selling tickets for flights it had already cancelled. And in fact, it's launched action in the Federal Court of Australia, alleging that Qantas engaged in false, misleading or deceptive conduct by advertising these tickets for, they calculated more than 8,000 flights that it already cancelled but not removed from sale. So specifically, it says that flights were departing between May and July 2022, and that tickets for these cancelled flights had stayed on sale for an average of 2 weeks, but some had been on sale for as long as 47 days. It also says that ticket holders for more than 10,000 cancelled flights were not informed that they'd been cancelled for an average of 18 days after the cancellation decision, and as much as 48 days. If it's found guilty of these charges, they carry maximum penalties for each breach of up to 10 million Australian dollars, which is around 6.5 million US dollars, or three times the total benefits obtained, or 10% of the corporation's turnover, whichever is greater. And let me tell you, Qantas had a good turnover last year, so they could be looking at a big bill. It is also looking into reports that Qantas's COVID flight credits were expiring too quickly. Most of them were set to expire at the end of December, but the airline has already reacted to this and has said that it will remove all expiry dates on travel credits for Qantas and Jetstar flights going forward. Indeed, it's offering double the standard number of frequent flyer points for any flights booked with a COVID credit before the end of this year. So in a bid to recover some of this goodwill it's lost amongst its flyers, Qantas has earmarked a further investment of $80 million Aussie dollars for customer service improvements. That's around $53 million US. So the improvements they've specified include adding more resources to their call centres, training staff better at its call centres, more generous support when operational issues arise, reviewing long-standing policies for fairness, improving the quality of in-flight catering, and increasing the number of seats that can be redeemed using frequent flyer points. Of course, it remains to be seen whether this is enough to restore confidence in the carrier. But in the meantime, things keep getting worse for Qantas, because earlier this week, Qantas pilots called for the resignation of the chairman of the board, a chap called Richard Goyder, following the revelations that he'd accepted a $64,000 Australian dollar pay rise at a time when Qantas pilots were expected to swallow a two-year pay freeze. Pilots say that the culture at Qantas will not improve and cannot improve without major changes to leadership. Now, Goyder has been around for quite a while at Qantas. He was, in fact, part of the illegal dismissal of over 1,700 staff during COVID and has been the chairman throughout all the recent turmoil at the carrier. His salary now sits at just under $500,000 US per year. Nice job if you can get it, I guess. In response to the calls for his resignation, he said that he still holds confidence from the rest of the airline board and that the carrier's significant shareholders and investors still want him to retain in his current role. But the dissatisfaction continues, because now Qantas's network aviation pilots have declared an intent to strike. Members of network aviation will stop all work effectively from midnight on Wednesday, October the 4th for 24 hours. And this is one of 25 potential actions already approved by Australia's Fair Work Commission. So if you don't know who network aviation is, they operate around 300 weekly flights, specialising in things like the fly-in, fly-out mining charters, corporate charters, emergency freight. They also operate some of the airline's regular passenger services with QantasLink, and some charter work under Network Aviation's brand with a fleet of around 30 aircraft. So not a major disruption for Qantas flyers, but definitely something that could have further impact on the carrier's reputation. The argument basically is the same as it is that pilot groups everywhere. The Australian Federation of Air Pilots says that network pilots are paid significantly lower than pilots at comparable airlines. Haven't we heard that an awful lot this summer? But now it's hitting there. So, you know, Qantas is fighting fires on so many fronts. And with a strike coming, you know, it could end up blowing up into something much bigger at a time when the airline's reputation really can't sink much lower. It really needs to get all of these issues sorted out before anything else gets out of control. And I have to say, if there's one person's job I really don't want right now, it's poor Ms. Hudson, who's left to sort all this mess out that Mr. Joyce left behind.
Well, I mean, instead you have to sort out all of my messes, so it's probably similar.
No comment.
Well, moving swiftly on, I did want to talk about where Emirates is sending its A380s this week, but instead I decided so much has gone on at Ryanair that we could not talk about them. So it's really now a case of, well, where do we start? I guess let's start with ATC shortages, because London Gatwick is again having problems with limited amounts of staff in the air traffic control towers, meaning that slots have to be cancelled and flights have to be cancelled. Well, our good old friend Mr. O'Leary was not too happy about this at all, and basically, straight up, instead of planning flight cancellations or anything, said that Ryanair would refuse to cancel any flights due to the shortage. I do wonder how that works, though, because, you know, if there's not a slot for them, then they're not going to be allowed to take off, I guess. So I wonder if Ryanair just loads all of the passengers on the plane and then, you know, if they can't take off, takes them all off again. But then at least, you know, it doesn't look like Ryanair's proactively cancelling stuff. I don't know. If you've ended up in this situation, let me know. It's interesting that NATS CEO Martin Rolfe immediately one of his spokespeople for the airport said that Ryanair has a very small operation, so it's unlikely that they would be impacted. Although, you know, I do like that Ryanair really went out and said that. It is quite interesting, though, because they do, you know, I think they've got a decent number. They've got about 800 movements a day at Gatwick.
A lot to me.
Yeah, sorry, through the whole NAT system, maybe. Or is it Gatwick? I'm not sure. I need to double check that. But, you know, it's a lot. So it's not their biggest London airport by any means, of course. Their biggest London airport is London Stansted. And London Stansted's even going to get a boost this winter because it's going to be getting more 737 MAXes. Yay!
Not a London airport.
It is a London airport.
It's about an hour outside of place, miles away.
It's a London airport. Emirates fly there. It's a London airport. Gatwick, Luton and Stansted are all going to be adding new connections to 7 destinations across Europe and North Africa this winter. If you're into skiing, you can go to Basel and Tatry. And if you're into winter sun, you can go to Orizarte, Vigo, and even major cities like Belfast International, Tirana International and Treviso Airport. So, you know, it's quite interesting seeing what they're doing there. They're going to base 2 more Boeing 737 MAX aircraft at Stansted to meet increased capacity and demand. So this means that the airport's going to have 50 MAXs based there now, which is not insignificant. But I mean, this is their biggest base across their whole network. I did have an argument with someone about this once and looked into the numbers, and it's London Stansted is by far their biggest operation. But speaking of the MAX, it seems that the MAXs are not going to be new MAXs going to Stansted. And the reason I say that is because Ryanair has fallen out with the operators of Dublin Airport over charge increases and a lack of sustainability incentives. So they really threw their toys out of the pram and just announced that they were going to move 19 MAX jets to other European airports that would incentivize efficient aircraft use. Interesting one to see where that goes. I assume there's going to be some of those aircraft that are going to Stansted, because today Ryanair came out and blamed Boeing delays for winter schedule cuts. So Ryanair is making cuts to its schedule because of delivery days. It only now thinks that it would take 14 out of the 27 aircraft that it was expecting to be delivered in late 2023. You know, Ryanair is pinning this on Boeing. I think, I'm not sure if it's so much delays as, you know, it's just still not being caught up from before. But
pre-COVID,
who knows?
Yeah. Exactly. And the grounding and everything else.
It's a shame, though. But, you know, they're going to get their aircraft at some point. The last thing that I briefly wanted to touch on with Ryanair is that they are also thinking about moving to the Brussels Stock Exchange. Right now, they're listed on the Dublin Stock Exchange. And while they're dissatisfied with Dublin Airport, they're also dissatisfied with the listing rules that apply to being on the Dublin Stock Exchange. Because O'Leary says that it's too closely aligned to the governance rules of the London Stock Exchange. Again, you know, I don't really know what impact this will have, but, you know, watch this space. maybe you get free cream pies if you're on the Brussels Stock Exchange.
Brilliant. He certainly got one in the face last week. But somebody said to me, do we think that was a publicity stunt?
That was me on like 2 podcasts ago or so.
Oh, was it? I thought it was a very smart person that asked me that question this week. But
rude.
It was obviously my memory dragging up something you'd said to me. but it feels like Ryanair is not happy unless it's annoying everybody. You know, it's like, we're going to complain about ATC, we're going to complain about airports, we're going to complain about, you know, the stock exchange. You know, is there anyone that Michael O'Leary actually likes?
He likes me when I met him. He was very nice. but, you know,
he probably
it
didn't have a cream pie to put in his face.
Yeah, it works, though, because that was also in Brussels, actually. But it works because, you know, we're talking about it and we're writing about it. So they're getting their publicity.
They certainly are. They certainly are. And I think when you're as big and as powerful as Ryanair, you could afford to make some enemies along the way because everybody still wants you. But it's interesting that they're complaining about Gatwick, because there's an airline that I want to talk about that really doesn't want to fly to Gatwick, and that's the Nigerian airline Air Peace. So, you know, Air Peace has been talking for quite a while that about flying to London and that it intends to operate these flights. And actually, it's getting a step closer, because recently it obtained its UK third country operator authorization. That was a mouthful, TCO authorization. But following the approval to fly, the country's aviation authorities have proposed that Air Peace run their flight operations from either London Stansted, not a London airport, or London
Definitely
Gatwick.
A London airport.
But the chief executive of the airline, Alan Onyema, rejected the offer by the UK authorities, citing the bilateral air service agreement. He wants to advocate for Air Peace to establish air service to a primary airport, meaning Heathrow, and emphasise that all the UK carriers, including British Airways and Virgin Atlantic, already fly into Nigeria's primary airports, such as Lagos. In a comment to media, Alan said, "It took 7 years for them to come and do the audit. Now we've got the approval. The next thing is slots, and they're telling us to go to London Stansted or take London Gatwick. I'm not going to Stansted or Gatwick. You come to the primary airport in Nigeria, and by BASA, the bilateral air services agreement, you enjoy the two primary airports, so you will give me your own primary airport. It's Heathrow or nothing." Well, this isn't the first go on.
Can I just point out my number one sort of frustration about the comments that you've just repeated?
go on.
Is that London has a primary airport and secondary airports, so I think he's comparing apples with pears, because Lagos only has one airport. So, you know, it only has a primary airport. I think rather he should be looking at, I want to fly to the city of London. Maybe not London City with a 777, but the city of London, you know, is the primary city rather than the primary airport. I think there needs to be some sort of understanding there that, you know, Gatwick is still a good airport, even if, you know, and it still serves London, you know,
I would argue, yeah, Gatwick is the second primary airport for sure.
If anything, it's maybe a bit better because it's not as busy.
Yeah, and I'm not sure they've got many sort of code shares or partnerships in place that they could really leverage by being at Heathrow. But anyway, this isn't the first time that Nigeria and the UK have had a disagreement regarding London Heathrow slots. Because back in 2011, Nigeria threatened to revoke permission for British Airlines due to Arik Air's inability to secure slots at Heathrow. According to CH Aviation, Air Peace is currently the only Nigerian carrier that's authorised to operate in the UK, which will probably not be to Heathrow, or maybe it will, I don't know. But it might soon be joined by another, because United Nigeria Airlines, a relative newcomer to the aviation industry, has also laid its cards on the table for its intentions to operate London flights. In fact, it's already received local permission to fly to the United States, to Europe and to the Middle East. Specifically in Europe, it's covering the UK, Italy, the Netherlands and Ireland. In the US, it's Houston. And in the Middle East, Dubai. Nigeria already has a bilateral agreement with all of those countries, which I'm guessing that United Nigeria will try to leverage to get reciprocal approvals from UK regulators. But there are some significant challenges ahead before that particular airline is going to make any headway with their flights. For a start, its current fleet is a grand total of 4 Embraer ERJ-145s, which clearly won't be flying off to the UK or the US anytime soon. It will also need to meet various safety requirements and audits to get its approvals. You know, those destinations mostly, well, some of them are served by foreign airlines. For example, KLM, BA and Virgin all fly into Nigeria from their hubs. There isn't any direct connection to Houston, although the mayor of Houston, Sylvester Turner, did visit Nigeria recently and said that he wants direct flights to the city. The only flights into Nigeria offered by US-based airlines from two airports, there's Delta operating daily from Atlanta and United operating three times weekly directly from Washington Dulles. So it is fairly underserved, but it's a very difficult country to serve. You know, as Emirates found out, to its shame, because they used to fly 11 times a week into Lagos, but the route's been suspended for over a year because of the block funds dispute. I won't go into that now, but there's
That's plenty on
Simple Flying. Air Peace was flying to Dubai as well, but their service was stopped because the UAE basically cancelled visas for Nigerians and banned them because of this big dispute with Emirates. That ban was actually lifted 2 weeks ago, but they haven't indicated when the route is going to resume, if at all. But, you know, back to the main crux of the story. Air Peace, Heathrow, you know, we've already talked about Gatwick being a good secondary airport. It feels like it's almost cutting off its nose to spite its face, saying that it will only go to Heathrow, because I think the chances of getting a slot there are pretty slim.
I would agree.
That was a short discussion. I'm glad to hear we're all in agreement there. But I think that's probably all we've got time for today. We've been talking for a while. We hope you enjoyed it and welcome your feedback at editorial@simpleflying.com.
For more great content, you can visit our website at simpleflying.com or find us on social media. Simply search for Simple Flying.
If you enjoyed this podcast, please leave us a rating on your favourite podcast player. Thanks for listening.
Bye.